your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meet and merry part, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about, to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet, everybody, and happy St. Patrick's Day. My guest tonight is Barry Fitzgerald, and he's known to many as Ghost Hunters International's show. He was on all 56 episodes, and he traveled the entire planet chasing the quandary of paranormal and supernatural phenomenon. But he's also an author and researcher and a very proficient master in the world of the strange and the supernatural in his own right. And being an Irishman, who better to have as a guest on St. Patrick's Day? And I know Barry knows a lot of myths and lore, and he's a great teller of tales, so he might just have one or two up his sleeve. So, Barry, welcome.
Marla, as I live and breathe, it's great to be back on the show, and thanks for reaching out to me on this very auspicious day, of course, for the Irish.
Who else? I mean, you know, I don't know any leprechauns by their first name, so, you know, it made just great sense to have you on.
Yeah.
And let me start by saying that St. Patrick's Day, we know, was originally celebrated with religious services and feasts in honor of St. Patrick.
Yes.
But when the Irish immigrants brought St. Patrick's Day over to, like, the United States and around the world, it became more of a secular celebration worldwide. So
yes,
people celebrate the day, but I'm not so sure that people know much about St. Patrick himself. So that might be a good place to start.
Yeah, well, St. Patrick in himself, he wasn't Irish, and that may surprise a lot to know, but he originally came from England, in particular Wales, and he was captured during a raid by the Irish into the Welsh territory, and he was brought back as a slave,
mm-hmm.
And onto Irish soil, where he was his duties, part of his duties, of course, was to herd the sheep and maintain the flock numbers in County Antrim. And it was believed that whilst he was on this particular hill, and I used to live beside this hill, it's called Slemish, and that is in County Antrim. It's an old volcanic plug. And I have climbed the mountain several times with Max, my four-legged companion, God rest his soul, and we had many an entertaining day climbing that hill. But St. Patrick himself, during his time there, it was suggested, and this is the very interesting thing from looking at the paperwork, is that he communed with the spirits on the hill, he managed to escape. And he went back to England, where he found Christianity,
mm-hmm.
and he returned to the island and brought the religion with him and started to spread it throughout the land. And that was St. Patrick himself. That was the history, without going into too much detail, of St. Patrick and how he brought Christianity to the island. He felt it was his duty to bring the new religion to the land, of course. But St. Patrick, although he was bringing a Celtic form of the religion, and not a lot of people understand that there was a difference between Celtic Christianity and the Christianity from Rome, Orthodox Rome religion. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very different. And primarily, the locales that we tend to find the old churches and things at, they were traditionally tribal areas. So in itself, the church was allowed to be set up, and it was financed by the tribes themselves, as long as the tribes could slip in their abbot. So it was a representative of the tribe that regained control of that particular area. In Ireland, we tend to call that a racket. That in itself is how the Celtic tradition went through. And there was a lot of druids and things like that were converted into Christianity. And it had to be said that, unlike other areas within the British Isles, Christianity here was pretty, I should say that it was accepted very, very easily. And there was hardly any blood spilt. And if there was blood spilt, I'm sure it was just a pinprick here or there. So that was the Celtic traditions, and a lot of the old myths and legends and a lot of the old ways were incorporated into the manuscripts that were being detailed here in Ireland and were being shipped across into Italy, back into Rome. And we helped steer Christianity from this little meager island. We helped steer it within the great continent of Europe. So we've had an impact. And, you know, from a Druidic sense, the Druids, they absolutely despised anything written down. That wasn't their way. They were an oral tradition. But the problem with oral traditions, like we see with the Druids in Wales, who were pushed back further and further and further into until they met their end in Anglesey on the west coast. They were completely obliterated, and with that goes the history. With that goes the traditions, the faith. Everything is destroyed because it's oral, the oral traditions. Mm-hmm. But within Ireland, some of those oral traditions, although frowned upon, were written down because we had people who were converting over into Christianity, and those legends and things were being written. We were able to keep a lot of that.
Let me interrupt about the Christianity part, because I've had two or three people come to me about this, that St. Patrick was known for getting the snakes out of Ireland. And, you know, somebody said, well, there were no snakes in Ireland. And they said that the snakes was a metaphor for pagans, like St. Patrick's wanted to get the pagans out of Ireland.
Yeah. Whenever folks say to me now, so did St. Patrick get rid of the serpents? And I roll my eyes and say, oh, that old nut, horse nut or chestnut. it's a modern take that it was in reference to the old pagan past, but that's not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. What certainly the work that I've been doing, it would suggest that actually this is looking at a very, very older tradition of serpent worship, in which the Christianity was bringing to the island to override it. In fact, not necessarily override, but incorporate, pull it in to the traditions. And of which we are formed today, and a lot of people would be horrified to understand that. What do you mean by that? You see, to understand this, we have to go back into our ancient past and draw the information from our Nordic countries, in which a lot of this was seen up there. You see, the passage chambers, the Neolithic passage chambers that predate the Great Pyramids of Giza, are dotted all across the island of Ireland, but they just didn't appear there. They also appeared in England and Scotland and Wales, and also up into the Nordic countries. In fact, we find a lot of it expanded all the way through Europe.
Mm.
But its origins, the origins of those particular passage chambers, they sit comfortably in the Fertile Crescent, places like Iraq, Syria. Mm-hmm. And we can see this now in the historical record and an archaeological record that in 2016, for instance, there was a grave that was discovered in County Antrim, where St. Patrick, of course, was held captive, which uncovered remains, human remains, of people that were traced back to Syria. Now, I'm not saying that the entire lot came across in one lump. That's not the case. What I speculate is that you had the knowledge of the religion that was filtering across, and part of that came into Ireland via the Nordic countries and down in through the Orkney Islands and the top of Scotland. That's where they originated and filtered down through. After the Orkney, then years later, Stonehenge was built in southern England. We were already, they were already well established in Ireland at that particular time. But within the passage chambers, we find the serpents. And because a lot of these places were doorways, there were liminal places between one world and another.
Mm-hmm.
These were places where you went to commune. And places like that, we have to understand that the gatekeepers, if you like, to the knowledge of the spirit world, were often depicted as serpents.
Mm.
And you see, that belief system came from the Nordic traditions, where when a soul leaves the body, not a spirit, because that was a different thing altogether. At the point of death, the spirit left, but the soul lingered for a few days to weeks to months around the body. But when it finally broke free from the body and entered these places, these receptacles of the soul, they went through a form of metempsychosis, which is a change of appearance. They transformed into serpents. And so what we were communicating with were the ancestors who were in serpent form, who brought the knowledge from the other side, which we would call today the Akashic Records or the global consciousness. Mm-hmm. It was this well on the other side that they would bring the information through. So that's where we would have the serpent connection. So it was believed that when St. Patrick came to the island, he was putting his foot on the old ways and making a new mark for his religion, and it formed from there. But getting back to St. Patrick and the Celtic Catholicism,
mm-hmm.
the Celtic traditions. He was at loggerheads with Rome, and not a lot of people understand this. They were totally inconsolable. Rome released a coin in which it had one bishop from Rome on one side and St. Patrick on the other, and in reality, that would never have happened. The two men hated each other, absolutely despised each other, because they had different ideas of what they wanted the religion to do and everything else, and Rome wanted everything more centralized, and that wasn't the case, because within the Celtic Christianity, eventually, of course, that was to happen. There was an influx from Rome that came to the island, and that was the end of Celtic Christianity.
Hmm.
See, that's something I just learned for a change. That's good. I have to jump into this immediately because so many people were talking about leprechauns.
Oh, yes.
And you can't talk about anything else on a St. Patrick's Day show except leprechauns in some ways.
Yeah.
Why are they associated with St. Patrick's Day?
I think in itself, it's just a case of everything Irish, and leprechauns, or as some call them, leprechauns. They of course formed associations with that. There was never a connection with St. Patrick and a leprechaun, but the idea of the leprechauns that we have today is very Disney-esque. This little man. In fact, the modern leprechaun is more a tourist trap than anything else. And there's an author and researcher in the north who released an absolutely wonderful book called The Dark Fairies, and he describes the early depictions of the leprechaun as being something which in itself is totally alien to us today in the modern appreciation. These early leprechauns, they were brown in color, that was small, they stank to high heaven, and what a temper did they have. These were creatures that you certainly did not want to encounter at any time. But today he's converted into a wonderful little shoemaker that wears green and has all the wonderful attributes of a very welcoming Irish mentality. But in reality, they were nasty buggers.
Well, that goes on. A question came in from Bruce Tango, and he said that he would like to hear some lore about the leprechauns, which we're doing, and wants to know if you ever encountered any. Are they good or evil? He said he's heard lots of different things and would like to hear what you have to say about them and your experiences with them.
I have to say I've never came across a leprechaun. But I do know that that this time of year there tends to be a leprechaun hunt in Omeath over on the east coast, and it's as tradition would have it. There was a gentleman out on the hillside, and in Omeath, walking one particular day, and he heard this absolute almighty terror and commotion that was unfolding on the hillside. And when he went to investigate, he found that this eagle had attacked a leprechaun, and there was a god-awful fight, and then the leprechaun vanished, but left behind all this amazing stuff, such as clothes, and a little pair of shoes, and a walking cane, and things like that. Now, these particular items are still in display in Carlingford, in a bar, nonetheless, in Carlingford. And visitors to the pub, of course, can go for a few pints and enjoy the display of the leprechaun suit that's there for all to see. But on the hillside every year, of course, there is a leprechaun hunt in which you can go and see if you can try and capture your own. But in tradition, of course, you have to keep your eye on them at all times. You cannot move. You cannot, break your vision to them. Otherwise, they vanish. And that is common enough, because if you're able to hold your focus on them, you're able to trap them, and then you can make them. You can squeeze them for their pot of gold, according to traditions. but should you accept anything from the fairy world, it usually comes with a kick in the ass,
and
that in itself is certainly something that happens within the leprechaun lore as well, because the gold usually turns into a pile of dirt, you will end up in wreck and ruin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they are nasty little buggers sometimes. Yes. I can just imagine. And I was going to ask you where the pot of gold came from and the rainbow and all that. But, you know, another question that came up was, and I was kind of thinking about this too. I think we all grew up with the movie Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Oh, didn't that horrify me as a child?
Well, only the banshee, right?
Yes, only the banshee, yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, the death coach didn't bother me, you know, but when he was up on that hill and the horse was whinnying and, you know, out come the banshee, it's horrible. But so, I mean, Ireland has so many mythical creatures, like the banshee, like the kelpie, like the pooka, you know, a few more. Does the banshee have any direct connection to St. Patrick's Day, or was it just in general part of the plot of the movie?
Generally, it was part and parcel of the movie itself. And I might add, whoever in Disney thought that that was a child's movie, they need a good slap in the face. I can remember being in the cinema with my father, who brought me to see it, and I hid behind the chair when the banshee came. And that tormented me for years after it. The banshee herself, the name originates from old Irish, and is in reference to, some people believe that the reference of the inference of she in the name is inferent to the people that she belongs to, banshee, woman of the she, and some people have suggested that the she, of course, are the fairy. But that's not quite the case, because banshee is actually woman of the mounds. The she were the mounds, the Neolithic mounds that we had spoke about earlier. She comes through those. Now that in itself would lend credence then to a place, a liminal place in which you went to gain knowledge. And she, the banshee, woman of the mountains, was coming through these areas into our world. And it's interesting because just recently I've been doing work for my next book, The Fruit of the Gods, and I've come across reference to cuneiform tablets that were found in Babylon. And remember, the people who built the passage chambers came from that area. And I have just found reference to a being that sits nicely with what we know as the banshee. So it is quite possible that the idea and memory of the banshee originated from Babylon.
Wow. That's interesting.
But the banshee herself, when she cries for and announces a death, It's such a frightening thing to occur because it kickstarts your fight or flight. And you know, you could be minding your own business and then suddenly you're introduced to this particular cry and your fight or flight immediately kicks in. It is the most horrifying thing to experience. And you know, I've heard it three times already. But I can't describe it. I just don't have the language to describe what this actually sounds like. Some people have said, you know, it sounds like a fox or a hare caught in a trap or even a woman out on the streets who's maybe had a few too many pints. But that's not the case because those things don't activate your fight or flight. Mm-hmm. What she's doing is activating and letting you know there is an importance. Listen to my message. Death is coming. And that is something which is, oh my God, it's absolutely frightening to hear her and experience that really vibrates into every essence of your body.
When you heard it three times, did death come?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Okay. Every time that I've heard it, there was a death.
Wow.
And but you know what? Through those experiences, I've been able to gain some insight into the banshee. And you know, there have been some rumors that that for those that hear the banshee, they're going to die. Well, I'm still here. But what she does is a reversal of that. She's letting people around the person that's going to pass over. She's letting them know that death is coming. Mm-hmm. The best thing that she could do, and it would be a horrifying experience for someone who is about to pass over and then hear the banshee. That would be terrible. She doesn't do that. It's the reverse. She lets everyone else know that death is coming. Prepare. But the person that's passing is oblivious. And I thought to myself, there is some compassion there with the banshee that I was able to see. And it was something that I wanted to examine within the book and explore that further. And there was an essence of compassion with her, which in a strange sort of a way, I appreciated.
Yeah, it's nice to have the good and the bad side, you know, that there was that compassion there.
Absolutely. Now, some people say that the old traditions, of course, suggest that if you have a Mac or an O in your name, that's it. Your entire family line are cursed, and the banshee's coming for you. But that's not the case in the modern day. In fact, we have people who have come from Germany to settle in Ireland. We have Americans who came across us for holidays, and they've all experienced the banshee in their own ways. Mm-hmm. So it's not just an Irish thing. Now, in regards to her moving, say, is she heard in America, or is she heard in Iran or something like that? They have their own versions. The mm-hmm. Irish banshee stays predominantly within Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And there sometimes is some crossover with entities of another land that work mm-hmm. in unison, but predominantly she does not cross water. She's fixed here.
Good. Now that's got me curious about what we have here in the States or what other people have. I don't mm-hmm. offhand, I can't think of anything. So now I'm going to have to do a little digging. Thank you for that.
You're
welcome. Before we go to break, I have one more quick thing reference to the leprechauns, because when I was in school, we had to wear green on yes. St. Patrick's Day. Otherwise, okay. we would get pinched. And we never knew why. You know, I mean, kids just follow kids. And so uh-huh. every time, you know, if you forgot and you didn't wear green, you had to find a green piece of paper or something. And some kids turned out to be very black and blue by the end of the day.
Yeah.
So that does have something to do with leprechauns, doesn't it?
Not necessarily. I think that's just cruelty. St. Patrick, of course, being the Irish saint, is, of course, his color would be green and things like that. So that's possibly where that has been coming from and has migrated into the new versions of the legends and mythology and folklore. But in regards to the fairies working with the church, no, that wouldn't happen. And they're very, very indifferent. They really couldn't care less whether we live or die. And as long as we leave them alone, they leave us alone. Most times.
Yeah, I found, because I kind of looked it up on the net, and of course everything that there is true. But they said that it was the leprechauns that pinched you if you weren't wearing green. So that's, So they got a bad rap for pinching.
Yeah. No, I have to say, you know, again, like the leprechauns, you know, they're predominantly an Irish invention, but there are small creatures that have been seen, and in fact, I have come across something similar, earth spirit in nature, even in the United States. And I'm aware of people in the United States who have encountered their versions of what we would call the fairy. And in fact, I was quite bemused when I encountered one in Washington, D.C., in a forest in Washington, D.C. And I have to say, he was exceptionally brash and wanted to know who the hell I was and what I was doing there. and was very forward. And that in itself is not like what we would tend to find here in Ireland, who are more reserved, and it can take quite some time to end up getting the information that you need, because it's like sitting with tribal elders in the United States. You have to sit down and listen and be prepared to set aside quite an amazing amount of time before you get to what you need to know. Mm-hmm. It was quite an interesting thing to be there in Washington DC and have this thing confront me. Again, it was quite bemusing to see the difference in their attitude.
Well, it's Washington DC after all. That makes perfect sense. If it was down here in Southern California, I think it would have been a very laid back, entity. But, that's funny. All right. And on that happy note, we're going to take a quick break. So everybody stay put, and we'll be back with Barry Fitzgerald in just a couple of minutes.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back. So don't go away. If you end up with webbed feet, remember, you've been warned. Missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witches Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com.
Throughout time, events have occurred that have shaped human history. Spirit voices from the past have many stories to tell, and for the past several years, channelers Barry and Connie Strom have been conducting live channeling sessions and relaying those stories and messages from those on the other side. We invite you to tune in to Barry and Connie's new show, Channeling History, on the Para-X Radio Network, every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, as they relay the messages of those voices from the past, the ones who have witnessed history firsthand, and those who have made history themselves.
Hey everyone, it's Marla. If you like tonight's episode of Stirring the Cauldron and the archive podcast as well, take a look at the show's YouTube channel and check out the dozens of shows that are there just waiting to be heard. New shows are added each week, and while you're there, why not subscribe? It's free. And if you click on that tiny little bell icon at the top of the page, you'll be notified when new shows are available. Just go to youtube.com and then type in Stirring the Cauldron Para-X, and the link will appear. Just like magic.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And my guest tonight is Barry Fitzgerald, and being St. Patrick's Day, we're talking about St. Patrick's Day. All right. Barry, I'm really curious how people celebrate St. Patrick's Day here and there. I know what we do in the States. I mean, we have parades, we wear green, we eat corned beef and cabbage, we wear buttons that say, "Kiss me, I'm Irish," and yes, we drink a lot. Yes. Is the holiday celebrated differently in Ireland as opposed to here in the States or elsewhere?
It was always more reserved. And I have to say, to a point, still is. We're starting to catch up now with the United States. There are a lot of large parades, especially in the cities. You would tend to have large parades there, not like New York City or anything like that, but maybe half a dozen tractors and trailers and floats in the back, and things like that. And yes. There are a few pints consumed after lunch and things like that, but it's still pretty much reserved in that aspect. I suppose it's much the same as Halloween, or as we would call it here, Samhain. Mm-hmm. It originated here, of course, in Ireland, and went to America, and then came back to us. And we wondered, what on earth is this?
Things change, yes.
Things change, yeah. Yeah, when the holiday came back to us, we thought to ourselves, you've been in America, haven't you? St. Patrick's is different. And, you know, there's still a lot of areas that are dedicated to St. Patrick. And even with those places, there is huge, huge strangeness, high strangeness in these areas. Because St. Patrick, you see, came and tried to create his dominance on these areas. And there were instructions that came from Rome to say that that do not destroy these places, incorporate them. And unlike other places in mainland Europe that were leveled, a lot of the original sites still are very active here today, with high strangeness. And one particular site in County Tyrone is known as St. Patrick's Chair. And this place, it is the strangest of places, Marla, because it's a forest, a very, very old forest that has grown in this valley. And I have to say that there's a stream that runs through it, and on one of the high banks, there is this massive stone structure that remains from the pagan times, and this was a place that offerings were made, and the offerings were made to these other things, these serpent things. At that particular period, so around harvest time, the offerings were made, the people left, and then these things came forward to collect, if you like. This place is still very much high strangeness area. In fact, UFOs have been seen in this place. Wow. And right up to the present day. And in fact, I can go even further than that. There was a man that went missing in this place for 4 days, where he was taken, and before finally being left back with his dog in the middle of the search party that was looking for him on the fourth day. It is a very, very strange place. And the idea that we have St. Patrick marching the serpents off the cliffs and into the ocean, well, this is something, number one, we never had bloody serpents. So his job was pretty easy by the time he got to the island. But in this aspect, and you know, I spoke earlier about this metempsychosis, this serpent connection, because within this site, there is also a place known as the Cliff of the Demons. Mm-hmm. And this is where St. Patrick banished the serpents to. Yes, there's a cliff there, but he banished them back into the stone. And that common factor of the stone is something we see right up into the present day with high strangeness areas. And even the likes of David Politis there in the United States, where you've got all the disappearances of the people in the national parks, David has gone on record to say that the majority of people who vanish under strange circumstances vanish in boulder fields. So it's always about the stone. And even when we consider our English neighbours there, they have this fairy creature known and when we consider that and follow the name, the meaning of the name, for instance, goblin, this ugly creature, which causes all manner of trouble. That comes from Old English, or the Old French, which is gobelin, and that, of course, comes from the early Germanic period, which is kobe, which is hole in stone. So we follow that trace back to the stone. So there's always about the stone, and we see the UFOs who are passing, with many videos of UFOs flying into stone faces of mountains and just vanishing. And so there's something about the stone, and this area is no different. And a very, very unique area. In fact, I was there just last year. I was there and I was interviewing a friend of mine who is a researcher in England who was at the site with me. And as we were on the site, this growling, a very heavy growling, started to emanate from the forest. And I thought, what on earth? It actually paused me in the recording because I'd never heard anything just quite like this before. Mm-hmm. And to me, I was standing facing Paul. And I said, Paul, that seems to be coming from my right. And he said, no, that seems to be coming from my left. So both of us were experiencing something that seemed to be coming from a different direction. Both of us commented that we were also hearing something that was different. So although I was hearing a deep growling, Paul reported hearing something like a large cat that was protesting that we were there. But yet whenever we went back and listened to the recording, it was something completely different.
Huh.
And that is something that we tend to see as well within the fairy realms, within the ufology and the world of the jinn, is that when technology is with you and you happen to be fortunate enough to capture something on video, 9 times out of 10, it's not what we saw. It's something different. And we that was the first time that we actually got to see this in action with audio, in that it was portraying itself through the conscious reality or the conscious mind as being something else, but in reality, we were able to hear on the recordings. That's not what we experienced. So it was able to see this mischievous nature to the phenomena at the site.
Do you think it came from maybe a different dimension?
Oh yes, yeah. A lot of this stuff, the liminal doorways and things like that, always tend to lead to another dimension. This is very much dimensional crossover points.
And if a sound comes through one way, somebody would hear it in a different dimension, a different way than we would hear it, where it was coming from. So that makes a lot of sense.
It is quite possible. I know that one of the passage chambers that I attended during a summer solstice had some really weird happenings in it. And initially what I was there to do was to film the sunlight enter the chamber and just set up a camera and film as the sunlight penetrated into the darkness and made its way around the chamber. And that would take probably around an hour to film. So I left the camera in the passage chamber, and I also, strangely enough, left audio running at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I went up onto the mountain, and I was able to see everything, and everything was fine. But after about an hour, I came down, and I lifted the equipment, and off I went home. And I started processing the video, because I needed it for one of my own videos. And so as I was doing that, I was listening to the audio, when suddenly, within the audio, I started hearing something that really conflicted with what I was seeing in the video. You see, within the passage chamber, you have huge pillars, stone pillars that hold the roof up. And what I was hearing was the sound of those stone pillars, or something similar, turning in position, almost grinding in position. Now, because I was working with the video, I was able to see everything is perfectly still here. There's nothing moving, yet I'm hearing this huge stone grinding in its place. Mm. And shortly after that, then there was a drum beat. And it was two short ones and two deep ones. And this was repetitive. So it was bum, 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 bum. I assure you, Marla, that was not coming from our side. That was coming from the other side.
That's fascinating. There's so many things that we don't understand. And it's really important for people to dig a little deeper, and you do a lot of digging deeper and coming up with major things, and it's wonderful.
Well, sometimes, you know, it pays to dig. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's best just to turn the other way and go, okay, I've had enough.
Well, yeah, well, if you get that warning and that feel like you've got to run the hell out of there, yeah, that's one thing. Are there any superstitions connected with St. Patrick's Day?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. I've never heard of any, but I thought.
Yeah. No, not that I'm aware of. I think the only thing that I would certainly have trouble with is that you can't for the life of it, you can't find a bottle of wine anywhere. Because no one's allowed to sell alcohol on St. Patrick's Day.
No.
That can be a real pain in the backside.
I would say so. I think it's rather rude, personally. Jeez.
Everyone else around the world can celebrate it in their own way, except us.
Yeah, go figure. Well, you know, and I found this thing. It was called The Drowning of the Shamrock. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
All right. Well, what it says is at the end of the night, St. Patrick's Day, people celebrate by dunking a shamrock into their last glass of whiskey, which now you said that doesn't exist, as a toast to the saint. And then they toss the shamrock over their left shoulder for good luck. And it says this custom is predominantly taking place to honor St. Patrick, who may have used the shamrock as a teaching tool for Catholicism, because its three leaves are said to have represented the Holy Trinity.
Uh-huh. Sounds like something that comes from Mayo.
Well, next time you're drunk on St. Patrick's Day, throw a shamrock over your shoulder and see what happens. I mean, you just never know what's going on.
You know, there is one of those superstitions that we see in Mayo, strangely enough that we mention it. Because when, again, you know, we're looking at the serpents with St. Patrick, there is a huge mountain out there in Mayo, and it's called Crook Patrick. On top of it, the Christianity have built a church. So you'll find people who go on pilgrimage up to the top of this mountain. Now, I should reiterate here that this mountain is almost, the sides of it are around 45 degrees, if not steeper in parts, and it's like walking on shale. Mm. Now, I'm pretty good health-wise. Now, granted, tomorrow I turn 50, but yay, I'm still able to make my way up the mountain at a credible rate. I'm being overtaken by pensioners who are climbing this mountain to get, I don't know what, there must be some deadline to get to heaven, they're passing me in this mountain to get up to the top to the church. Where I'm sucking air from Belfast, and I'm thinking to myself, how is this even possible? But this mountain itself originates from the old times, from the times where serpent worship went ahead. And where you tend to find the serpent worship, where you tended to find the temples, you tended to find riches, the rich metals, and all of that stuff. And that's where a lot of the traditions within the world of folklore associate the dragon with gold. Mm-hmm. Because in the Celtic period, the Celts would have no idea what on earth a dragon was from the Middle Ages. It's so alien to them. Their dragon was the serpent, a giant serpent. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I just interviewed several people there at Christmas who had experiences just in the on the loch about 10 miles from here, where two giant serpents attacked the boat. Mm. And these things are said not to exist, but something was happening at Christmas time. But anyway, I digress. This particular mountain was a place of worship for the serpents. And strangely enough, it also is the seat of Ireland's largest gold reserves. So again, we see that connection with the gold and the serpent, the gold and the dragon. We see that, of course, that slips across into Utah and the ranch out there as well, where there's the symbolism is there, mm-hmm, of great wealth underground and the association with dragons protecting it.
Well, and dragons in mythological lore, they're greedy little guys. I mean, they'll take everything, and don't you dare try to take anything away. I mean, they're hoarders.
Exactly. And doesn't gold bring out the worst in us?
In everybody, yes. All of us creatures. the greed, and you hang on to it, and you don't want anybody to get it. That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Another question came in. Are there any famous hauntings that take place on St. Patrick's Day, like a residual haunting in a certain place?
I'm not familiar with that either.
Okay.
We do have occasions where there are some residual hauntings and things like that. In fact, I just put out a video recently, Whispers in Stone, on my Facebook, which explores that very thing about sounds that are recorded in the stone. And I was able to capture some of that and put it out in the video so people could hear it. The likes of horses in a carriage coming across a bridge and things like that. But not with no connection, though, with St.
Patrick's. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was also something that I was reading that people don't know quite where St. Patrick's is buried.
Well, there is a belief that he's buried in Downpatrick. Which is in County Down, up the north of the island. And they have this huge St. Patrick's Cathedral beside him. So that's one hell of a grave marker. But whether he's there or not, I can't say. But certainly that's where they say he's buried. Whether that is the case, I do not know.
Yeah, well, there's, same thing with... King Arthur, although we don't know for sure, who's buried in King Arthur's thing. We all, in this country, we know that who's buried in Grant's tomb is Grant.
Yep.
But
mm-hmm.
other than that, yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
How long did St. Patrick live a very ripe old age?
Oh, he did, yeah. Now, he maybe wasn't the most pleasant of people. And I would suppose, like many men, we do hit a certain limit on our age, and we start to turn cranky. We start to go off, and I think this might have been the case with St. Patrick. But he was also known that there's been some rumors there that he was a book burner.
Mm.
So a lot of the old histories that would have been there, possibly that would have conflicted with ideas that he had for Christianity, would have been burned. Mm-hmm. And if that was the case, that was a very, very bad thing to do. And granted, history is written by the victor. My God, history has shown us that. But I still think, it's something that shouldn't be done. Our history, we lose enough of our history. And we really need to find ways of keeping it and maintaining it instead of letting it just rot into the ether. And the perfect example of that is Babylon. We have cuneiform tablets there that are scribbled on clay, which is fantastic. That gives us an insight. But a lot of the history was also written on animal hide and paper. And we will never, ever get that back.
So it's
a shame.
It should be written because if it's oral, I mean, it's fine generation to generation, but it's like Chinese whispers. It changes. Uh-huh. But if it's written somewhere, they can't. Well, they could alter it, do the abridged version. But book burning is ridiculous. And people are trying to hide things, If they want everything to look like sunshine and lollipops, they'll get rid of the bad stuff.
Well, ain't that the truth? We see that definitely today, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Got another question. Somebody wanted to know, I guess they're going to be visiting Ireland at some point. What would you suggest as them to visit for the chance at a paranormal experience? Favorite choices.
I would definitely tell people, do not stay in Dublin. Fly into Dublin. It'll be cheaper. hire a car and get the hell out of it, head west. If the old Celts, they left a map of Ireland, and the way of the ancients. If you wanted to know anything about the ancients, you went west. There's also a castle I made out. I had an experience at. In fact, I left. I didn't want to be part of it. It's down in Macroon, which is down in County Cork. Now, this castle is said to be the place where one of the Fitzgeralds was brought in for a banquet, a peace banquet. Now, it was like a Game of Thrones. It was like a scene from Game of Thrones where, you know, you've got the person, the Fitzgerald, who was causing some issue, freedom fighter, let's call him, and the crown in England couldn't catch him. So they decided that they were going to hold a peace banquet. And he went. I thought to myself, what? No ancestor of mine would have been that stupid to go. But he ended up going anyway. And they murdered him over the table.
Oh.
And it seems that this particular person called Cormac, he murdered the Fitzgerald over dinner. And in fact, the way he murdered him horrified the English who were in attendance. It seems that this particular castle is haunted with blood that runs down the walls. And also, I have to say that there is also, it's also said to be haunted by the spirit of a vampire. So that's a first on me. But I have to say, I've been to the site. I got halfway up the stairs into the castle, and it was just grating on me, and I said, no, this is not for me, and I turned and left. Great. And so that was it.
You live to hear it. You live to stay another day, yes. All right, we're just about getting ready to wrap up, but give everybody a chance to know where to find you on the web or, you know, website, Facebook, whatever you got going, and, you know, all that good stuff.
Well, the folks can find me on Facebook, under my own name, Barry Fitzgerald, and they can also have a look at my website, charmstealer.com. And if they wish to support me, there's a new book out on Amazon called The Deceptions of Gods and Men, just out this month, and it may be a good read for them.
And I think we'll have to have you back to talk about that.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
I just jump at all these chances. but it's very well worth it. Anything in the near future coming up that's really totally exciting, an event? Or, well, you just came back from an event, didn't you?
Yeah, I just came back from an event in the UK. But, there are things happening, Marla. And in particular, there's some equipment which is being designed to look specifically for signatures within all areas of the paranormal. There's going to be more information coming back in that when we have the devices up and running. They're very, very specific. They're not the typical bells and whistles that you tend to find. These things are designed to look for specific patterns.
Oh, wow.
So that's coming forward. And I will be back in England. I'll be speaking in Blackpool on June the 24th to the 26th. So I'm looking forward to that as well, at the Awakenings event. And between now and then, there's a video series that I'm working on for the YouTube channel. So that will be coming out shortly as well. So I'm looking forward to that. There's been it's what we need, let's just say.
Okay.
So I look forward to that coming out.
Sounds good. Well, thank you for showing up tonight. I really, really, really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure as always, Marla.
Well, we'll get you back about that new book and all kinds of stuff. And
great.
We'll talk about that later. But
thank you very much.
Thanks again. And thank you for everybody listening in tonight. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024.
The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.